to get serious and get away from rhetoric and take concrete steps in trading among themselves.
Well, there you have it. If African countries take concrete steps to trade among themselves, they will no longer be vulnerable to Western powers that want to impose their immoral culture as a condition for trade. I would like to thank our guest today, Derek Kiyonga, for his insight. Well, and that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. Drop us a line through our social media handle and let us know what you think. Goodbye for now.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
The World Health Organization, WHO, has urged countries to continue funding the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA, calling Israeli allegations against the UN body a distraction from the war in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Palestinian Information Center has covered this story and tells us more. The leader of the Hamas resistance movement has strongly denounced the Western pause in funding for the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, which assists the displaced people across the Israeli-bombarded Gaza Strip. Speaking recently, Hamas's political bureau chief, Ismail Haniyeh, said the decision to cut aid to besieged and displaced Palestinians at a time when they need it most due to Israel's ongoing war in Gaza, goes against the interim ruling by the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, to increase humanitarian assistance to Gaza significantly. Ismail Haniyeh added, "This indicates the existence of a systematic policy by those countries who support the Israeli occupation through starvation and siege of our people, instead of responding to the International Court of Justice's historic decision." Haniyeh added, "Israel is going after the United Nations agency because the International Court of Justice ruling was largely based on damning figures and testimonies provided by UNRWA staff. Several Western countries, not least the United States of America and Britain, have suspended their funding of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, following unproven allegations by the Israeli regime that some of UNRWA's staff were involved in the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm on 7th of October. Britain's former ambassador to Uzbekistan, Craig Murray, said the defunding of UNRWA is a reaction to the International Criminal Court's ruling against Israel. Michael Fakhry, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, said that the besieged Gaza Strip was to face inevitable famine because of Western pause in funding for UNRWA. The Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shtayyeh has charged Israel with a premeditated political attack on UNRWA and called for restoration of aid funds to the agency. Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, recently denounced the countries that have paused the funding to UNRWA. Francesca Albanese says the decision defies the order by the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, to allow humanitarian assistance to reach the people of Gaza. Albanese also said the governments cutting funds to UNRWA are most likely violating their obligations under the Genocide Convention. Francesca Albanese highlighted the timing of the defunding, which came just a day after the International Court of Justice's conclusion that Israel is plausibly committing genocide in Gaza. UNRWA has said it would be unable to continue its operations in Gaza and across the region beyond the end of February if funding for the agency is not restored. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered this story. The World Health Organization, WHO, has urged countries to continue funding the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA, calling Israeli allegations against the United Nations body a distraction from the war in Gaza. A spokesman for the World Health Organization, Christian Lindmeier, told a United Nations press briefing in Geneva, Switzerland, on Tuesday, 30th of January, "The discussion right now is much of a distraction of what is going on every day, every hour in the Gaza Strip." Christian Lindemeyer was referring to recent allegations by Tel Aviv that some UNRWA staff were involved in the cross-border attack on Israel by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas on 7th of October last year. Arguing that while these claims should be investigated, he said they currently serve as a distraction from measures preventing an entire nation's access to food, water and electricity. He added, "They also distract from the continuous shelling of Palestinians in Gaza, even in designated safe areas, as well as from attacks on shelters, schools and hospitals." At least 12 countries, Germany, Switzerland, Italy, Canada, Finland, Australia, Britain, Netherlands, United States, France, Austria and Japan, have suspended their funding for UNRWA, which was established back in 1949 to help Palestinian refugees across the Middle East. Separately, international aid agencies, including Oxfam and Save the Children, noted in a statement that the population of Gaza has already been facing famine due to Israeli siege and bombardment of the territory. A coalition of 21 aid agencies said, "We are shocked by the reckless decision to cut a lifeline for an entire population by some of the very countries that has called for aid in Gaza to be stepped up and for humanitarians to be protected whilst doing their job." The agencies noted that 2 million Palestinian civilians, over half of them children, rely on UNRWA for aid and their basic needs in Gaza. They said, "The population faces starvation, looming famine and an outbreak of disease because of Israel's continued indiscriminate bombardment and deliberate deprivation of aid for the population of Gaza." Pointing out that the aid cuts came directly after the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, ordered Israel to provide immediate humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza, they added, "If the funding suspensions are not reversed, we may see a complete collapse of the already restricted humanitarian response in the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Wafa News Agency has also covered the same story. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, warned on Monday, 29th of January, that it would not be able to continue its operations in Gaza and across the region beyond the end of February if funding for the organization is not restored. Following the announcement of several countries to temporarily halt funding to UNRWA, in a statement on Monday, 29th of January, UNRWA said, 9 countries have, as of today, temporarily suspended their funding to UNRWA. These decisions threaten our ongoing humanitarian work across the region, including and especially in the Gaza Strip. UNRWA is the primary humanitarian agency in Gaza, with over 2 million Palestinians depending on it for their sheer survival. The UNRWA Commissioner General, Philip Lazzarini, said he was shocked to see a suspension of funds to the agency in reaction to allegations against a small group of staff, especially given the immediate action that UNRWA took by terminating their contracts and asking for a transparent, independent investigation. Iran's Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani deplored recent allegations raised by the Israeli regime against the employees of UNRWA, describing it as another malicious action in the Zionist regime's inhumane treatment of Palestinians. The Iranian diplomat said Israel has leveled the allegations to justify its restrictions on humanitarian organizations active in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Nasser Kanani added, the accusations also seek to make Israel get away with unprecedented and heinous crimes of killing at least 150 members of international institutions such as UNRWA since 7th of October last year. Kanani also deplored the move by Western states to cut funding to UNRWA against the backdrop of Israeli allegations. He said, such behavior practically means accepting the claims of a criminal regime which, according to a ruling issued by the International Court of Justice, stands charged with genocide of the Palestinians and must be held accountable before international courts of law and world public opinion.
Depression is a mood disorder that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and loss of interest. It affects how you feel, think, and behave, and can lead to a variety of emotional and physical problems. Patients may have trouble doing normal day-to-day activities and could sometimes even feel as if life isn't worth living. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Depression may require long-term treatment with a host of pills, antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, and tranquilizers, but sometimes the cure could be much worse than the ailment. Thousands of documented cases prove that the prescription of such drugs have led to suicide, acts of violence, and even murder. Death by prescription reveals the shocking truth about psychotropic drugs and a healthcare system that perhaps undermines the potential dangers of such medication. Stay with us for this part of the documentary.
Mark was 48 years old when he committed suicide in October 2013. He was suffering from recurring back pain and had had an operation, but the cure was worse than the ailment. It hit him hard, and he was prescribed antidepressants. Mark was the father of 2 children and had never had suicidal thoughts before, but in less than a week, the medication sent him into madness. His sister Florence has still not recovered from it. Is an antidepressant responsible for the death of Florence's brother? These heartbreaking events are echoed in thousands of documented cases across the world. Psychotropic drugs are under the spotlight. Antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, sleeping pills, and tranquilizers are supposed to stitch together the fragilities of the soul. They save many lives. But can they also lead to suicide or even murder? What are these psychotropic medications that are sometimes held responsible for acts of violence? First off are antidepressants, the grandfather of the new wave being Prozac. This antidepressant is supposed to act upon depressive states, deep sadness, psychic fatigue, and anxiety. It should give a mood boost in order to bring the patient back to a stable condition. In France, it's taken by at least 6 million people. Next, we have the benzodiazepines, with the most widespread examples being anxiolytic drugs such as Valium or Xanax, but also a high number of sleeping pills. They treat states of anxiety, panic attacks, and insomnia. Unlike antidepressants, they bring the mood down to calm the anxiety. It's a bestseller in France. 11.5 million people take it each year, more than one in four adults. Finally, there are various tranquilizers and powerful neuroleptics, which influence the nerves. Nobody disagrees with how useful these medications are, as they act upon serotonin, a neurotransmitter that regulates the mood. But depending on individuals, they can short-circuit the brain, which can be dangerous and even fatal. In France, Professor Evan is one of the only doctors to sound the alarm. He has compiled or translated a handful of reports and studies that warn against psychotropic drugs. At what moment do these medications become dangerous? For benzodiazepines, whose effects are immediate, it's during the first days of the treatment, especially when coming off the medication. For a large number of people, anxiolytics or sleeping pills can be more addictive than heroin, which is why the treatment shouldn't last longer than a few weeks. As for antidepressants, which don't take effect until 2 or 3 weeks of use, murder or suicide can occur during the first few days of treatment, whenever the dosage is increased, or when the medications are stopped. When this happens, a devastating rebound effect can occur that places some patients in a state that they feel compelled to continue. Before taking his life, Florence's brother was right at the beginning of his treatment. In his letter, he speaks of having acid in his body. Are prescriptions given too readily in France? To allow us to find out, we went to 6 randomly chosen medical clinics equipped with a hidden camera. 95% of psychotropic medication is supplied by general practitioners. Our scenario will be simple, going through a rough patch due to losing a job. 5 minutes and 32 seconds was all it took to get a prescription of anxiolytics during the first consultation. The second doctor hands over a prescription of antidepressants, which he confirms have virtually no side effects whatsoever. The third is not strictly in favor of psychotropic medication, but strangely, he still supplies Seroplex, an antidepressant. Only the fourth finds it too early to give a psychotropic medication in such a case. Antihistamines are also used to treat allergies, but they can facilitate sleep. The fifth proposes an anxiolytic. She suggests a half tablet, then a whole, then two, then up to 4 a day. The prescription lasts 3 months, whereas the recommended limit is 8 weeks due to the extremely addictive effects of Xanax. If that isn't enough, she suggests adding an antidepressant. But the record was beaten by the last doctor, who proposed both an anxiolytic and an antidepressant in only 2 minutes. Everybody's happy. Except when psychotropic medication drives somebody mad. Here's a brilliant young girl, Aurélie. 6 years ago, her treatment transformed her into a destructive machine. Aurélie could have died or gone insane. She attempted suicide and was then committed to a psychiatric hospital. 6 years ago, with a master's degree in economics, she found a job in New York. She worked hard, went out often, and was close to burnout. She returned to Paris. Her general practitioner was absent, so she met with a psychiatrist. The peaceful young girl was in a rage, and it worried her. So she consulted other doctors. Aurélie had a strong reaction to the dosage increase. a suicide attempt, followed by a psychiatric hospital. She therefore decides to stop the treatment. The violent urges disappeared immediately, but it would take her 2 years to fully recover. Today, Aurélie has rebuilt her life. She lives in London, where she has become a painter. But she still wants to know what really happened. She therefore meets with a reputed British psychiatrist, David Healy. For the pharmaceutical industry, this man is a menace. For years, he has denounced psychotropic medication as dangerous, and his expertise has led to major criticism for the leading laboratories. He claims that these pills are useful, but dangerous.
Well, first of all, the pills can be helpful. I use these pills to treat people, but they don't suit everyone. And when they don't suit you, they can definitely be poisonous. They can make you want to kill yourself. They can make you want to kill other people. And they can generally cause you to hear voices and become crazy. There's certainly about one in 20 people who go on the pills, at least, have what you could call an extreme reaction to them. So that's actually fairly common, okay? Roughly half of the people that go on these pills, they just aren't suited to them. They have a bad reaction, but they don't have an extreme reaction.
If someone has a side effect of the medication, they can say, listen, it's because you had a depression at the beginning, that's why you were like this. So they make you feel that it's because of your first state that you feel so bad. It's not because of the medication.
And this is the problem. This is where things really go wrong, where once you've been put on the pills, doctors don't recognize when they have made things worse. What they say is it's down to doctors. We make the pills, it's down to doctors to use them wisely. If things go wrong, it's the doctor's fault, not ours. Now, the pharmaceutical industry have as much control of the situation as the Soviet Union used to have during the 1960s.
Aurélie comes out of the interview with the impression that she was the victim of a medical error. She thinks about her psychiatrist with a heavy heart. So she will meet up with her 6 years later to finally turn the page. The psychiatrist concedes an error in the diagnosis, but the whole system leads to an increase of psychotropic consumption. It's in the interest of pharmaceutical companies to have a high number of ill people, as psychotropic medication represents a global market of tens of billions of dollars. As the number one user in the world of such medication, France is a true cash register. These happiness pills are making the pharmaceutical companies smile. Their profits exceed those of the petroleum companies. In the United States, this exaggerated medicalization has a particular resonance. As the years went by, unexplained suicides by children taking antidepressants or anxiolytics hit the public opinion. Here, a 10-year-old child is phoning the emergency services. His 14-year-old sister has attempted suicide, having been on Paxil for just a few days, an antidepressant known in France under the name of Seroxat.
This is 911. Who is this? Where is your sister? What is she trying to do? Take pills?
What? No, my dad told me.
Hold on, tell me.
GSK, the laboratory that manufactures Paxil, managed to conceal explosive studies conducted by its own experts. Following a court trial, the authorities obliged GSK to reveal the studies. They showed that the medication increased suicidal thoughts or acts by up to 8 times. Massacres perpetrated by teenagers should also be mentioned. 9 out of 10 killers were on a cocktail of psychotropic medication. Despite thousands of people that call for action against the pharmaceutical companies, psychotropic medication remains a bestseller in the U.S. and it's business as usual.
I
Every year, the powerful American Psychiatric Association organizes the most important symposium on the planet. Over 5 days, 15,000 psychiatrists from across the globe attend several conferences. The pharmaceutical industry struck gold. It largely finances the event by promoting its latest medications, and the stands invade an entire hall. For the occasion, even the Vice President of the USA, Joe Biden, is here. This reflects the importance of the event. Leading the American Psychiatric Association is Jeffrey Lieberman, certainly the most influential psychiatrist on the planet. During the press conference, we asked him questions regarding the dangers of psychotropic medication.
These are not dangerous drugs by and large, or certainly no more dangerous than those which are used routinely for other non-psychiatric types of disorders. The side effects should never be a deterrent for somebody who genuinely suffers from depression getting treatment.
This is a disease, a brain disorder, with about a 5% mortality rate. Depression is a disorder where you cannot experience emotion because you feel dead inside. You feel hopeless, helpless, and you would be dead, but you probably don't have the wherewithal to figure out how to commit suicide.
A lot of the over-exaggeration about fears of side effects and are promulgated by people who either don't know or don't want to know, and they foment this.
Is Jeffrey Lieberman best positioned to answer about this medication? The list of pharmaceutical companies that finance him is infinite. We can better understand why Jeffrey Lieberman doesn't much like party poopers, the hundreds of protesters who regularly come to disturb the great gathering of psychiatry. This includes a multitude of associations, as well as the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, which is run by Scientologists. Today's slogan, "Stop drugging our soldiers." A wave of unexpected suicides effectively shook the U.S. Army. And the protesters blame the antidepressants that are administered in 9 out of 10 cases.
22 U.S. veterans are committing suicide every single day. There are more active duty military dying from suicide in 2012 than on the battlefield. There are 49 international drug regulatory warnings on antidepressants that caution against aggression, mania, suicide, in some cases homicidal ideation. It's outrageous. So it's not as if the psychiatrists don't know.
Faced with the protesters, the mainly foreign psychiatrists are somewhat skeptical.
What I just discussed a little with them was that there seemed to be sometimes it's different, difficult to know if there's a causative relationship. If you have a progression in the disease and you are medicated too, is it the medication or is it the disease itself?
I read stories that quite a few veterans committed suicide last year, but I was wondering how many suicides have been prevented by taking antidepressants. So I suppose you can't cure everything with just taking a pill. You should give the psychotherapy as well, but I'm not sure if the antidepressants are only responsible for the increased suicide rate.
In the Congress room, many conferences take place one after another, but nobody is dealing with the dangers of antidepressants. One of them is led by Anthony Rothschild, a psychiatrist well known for his successful books on psychotropic drugs. This great specialist is holding a debate on the adaptation of treatments depending on the illness. But not once does he say that antidepressants should not be prescribed. Our question is straightforward.
It seems that there is a lot of danger with antidepressants. What do you think about this? Like suicide or, murders?
No. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but I just told you there's no reliable scientific evidence that antidepressants cause people to commit murder or any other crime or suicide.
So how come that on boxes?
Right, this is not serious, okay?
Is this a surprising reaction? Anthony Rothschild also has conflicts of interest with an impressive number of pharmaceutical companies.
So I told you what I thought. You're going to keep asking me the same question.
Okay.
Well, you got my quote, all right?
Okay, very good.
How can such things still be said in this day and age when on all the stands promoting psychotropic medication, whole boards are covered by signs warning of side effects? Among the several side effects, the risk of suicide, or violent behavior is prioritized by all. These warnings are a legal obligation enforced by medical organizations. But how much are these warnings worth next to the publicity hype from the pharmaceutical companies?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways.
These ads, banned in France, reach tens of millions of households in the United States, one of the rare countries where the promotion of medication is allowed. For the promoters of these ads, a new customer is a captive customer.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Analysis by Cancer Research UK has estimated that there are 33,000 extra cases of cancer in the United Kingdom each year associated with poverty and deprivation. While women from England's poorest areas die on average 5 years sooner than their wealthier counterparts. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Research suggests one in four economically inactive people live in the 50 local authority areas in England with the highest levels of poor health. The report published by the Institute for Public Policy and Research, Commission on Health and Prosperity, found a double injustice, where places with worse health also had lower levels of household income and higher rates of poverty. The analysis by the Office of National Statistics found that people living in England's most deprived local authorities were almost 1.5 times more likely to report economic inactivity, meaning they were not working, studying, or seeking a job, and twice as likely to be in poor health. The Institute for Public Policy and Research describes such areas as bad health black spots, where there was a correlation between high levels of poor health and economic inactivity. In the cities of Liverpool, Manchester, Nottingham, almost 1 in 10 people were in bad health, while more than a third of the population were also economically inactive. In contrast, less than 4% of the population in Hertfordshire, in Western England and South Oxfordshire, and in Wokingham were in bad health, while less than a fifth were also economically inactive. The places experiencing poor health and high levels of economic inactivity also have some of the lowest levels of healthy life expectancy in England, with Liverpool being 58 years compared with Wokingham, where the health life expectancy is more than 70 years. Efua Poku-Amanfo, the report's leading author, said that the research made the case for government spending and action on health. She said, "It's not just the morally right thing to do, it's the economically sensible thing to do. Bad health black spots, especially in the northeast and northwest of England and in southern Wales, are stifling national economic growth and holding back the wealth and health of the nation. The Institute for Public Policy and Research study from 2022 found that economic inactivity because of sickness was at its highest level since records began, with 2.5 million working-age adults inactive because of their poor health. A solution to the black health black spots proposed by the report were for the establishment of specific areas akin to clean air zones. These health and prosperity improvement zones would instead focus on improving key factors that affect physical and mental health of individuals. Dr. Luke Munford, senior lecturer in health economics at the University of Manchester and academic co-director of the Health Equity North, said that the report sheds more light on the interconnected nature of poverty, poor health, and limited economic prospects and prosperity. All three are deeply unfair and are all three cluster in certain parts of the country. Meanwhile, the Labour Party's deputy leader and shadow secretary of state for levelling up housing and communities, Angela Rayner, said the Conservatives' promise to level up is a scam and their 14 years of failure is damaging people's health and opportunities. A government spokesperson, however, claimed we're committing to increasing healthy life expectancy by 5 years by 2035 and narrowing the gap between local areas by 2030, including by investing up to £14.1 billion to improve health services and help people live longer and healthier lives. The government spokesperson said our major conditions strategy will look at the prevention and management of conditions responsible for over 60% of ill health, and our plans for a smoke-free generation will make a significant difference with people in more deprived areas already twice as likely to die from smoking-related conditions. The government spokesman claimed, our back-to-work plan will also help a further 1.1 million people to look for and stay in work that's suited to their needs, including through integrated mental health support such as NHS talking therapies. The website Voxitic Polal Online has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to shocking new research by one of UK's leading public health experts, more than 1 million people in England died prematurely in the decade after 2011, owing to a combination of poverty, austerity measures, and the COVID-19 pandemic. The figures are revealed in a study by the Institute of Health Equity at University College London, led by Michael Marmot. They demonstrate the extent to which stark economic and social inequalities are leading to poorer people dying from cancer, heart problems and other diseases. Using Office for National Statistics figures, the report's author, Professor Peter Goldblatt, looked at the life expectancy of people across England who do not live in the wealthiest 10% of the areas of England. The report, titled Health Inequalities, Lives Cut Short, found that between 2011 and 2019, 1,062,334 people died earlier than they would have done otherwise if they lived in areas where the richest 10% of the population live. A further 151,615 premature deaths were recorded in 2020, although this number was higher than expected because of the coronavirus pandemic. Professor Michael Marmot, who authored a seminal review into health inequalities in the United Kingdom in 2010, said the premature deaths and widening inequalities were a dismal state of affairs. He urged politicians to do more to tackle the fact that poorer people are at much higher risk of getting and dying from illnesses which are closely linked to poverty, poor housing and unemployment. Professor Michael Marmot said 1 million premature deaths made dramatically worse by austerity measures is shocking political failure. The worse health of the more deprived 90% of the population compared to the best off 10% means that health inequalities involve the majority of society. He added, if you needed a case study example of what not to do to reduce health inequalities, the United Kingdom provides it. The only other developed country doing worse than us is the United States of America, where life expectancy is actually falling. Professor Michael Marmot said, our country has become poor and unhealthy, where a few rich, healthy people live. People care about their health, but it is deteriorating, with their lives shortening, though through no fault of their own. Politicians can choose to prioritize everyone's health or not. Currently, they are not.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a large number of women from across the country. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on December 27, 2023, a week before the birth anniversary of Lady Fatimah al-Zahra, peace be upon her. This day is celebrated as Women's Day in Iran. It is wajib, religiously obligatory, to have female doctors. So it is important for women to pursue medical training until there is an adequate number of female physicians. Teaching is also another example of wajib kifaya for women. It is obligatory to have an adequate number of women teachers. Now, sometimes this obligation may clash with managing a household, having children, or the resting periods and breaks that a housewife needs. Similarly, a woman's work hours may interfere with her ability to attend to the work at home. If there is a conflict in these cases, it is the duty of the country's officials to think about this. The number of these professionals should increase to the point where if a teacher is required to go to school 5 days a week, for instance, she should be able to go only 4 days without there being any lacks.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another teacher should be readily available to substitute for her. It should be the same for medical practitioners. Therefore, in professions, managerial positions, fundamental jobs, and jobs that are wajib-e-kifaya for women, the presence of an adequate number of women is obligatory. There should be no limitations. If a conflict arises between a woman's work at home and her professional duties, this should be managed in a way that ensures both areas are taken care of. Although, in my opinion, these two do not conflict with each other. I know women who have successfully balanced demanding social roles, whether it be academic or non-academic jobs, while also raising several children, and they manage to do both very well. Hence, these two tasks do not conflict with each other. There are two important points according to Islam's view. Women are free to be active in all fields, such as being active in society and politics, etc. However, this should take place while remembering two important points, which Islam is sensitive about. The first is the issue of the family, which I mentioned. The second is the potential dangers associated with sexual attraction.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Epic. Glory. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy. See the world through IRIB English Radio, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
In the limelight.
The Western countries' act of forcing UNRWA to cease its operations in Gaza at this crucial time serves no purpose. It contributes to the further devastation of the Palestinian people and potentially enables genocide in Gaza. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East iRoads, recently the International Court of Justice ruled in favor of provisional measures in South Africa's genocide case against the Zionist regime. Finding the risk of genocide plausible, the court ordered Israel to refrain from genocidal activities, prevent their commission, and punish those inciting genocide. Crucially, the court also ordered the Zionist regime to take immediate and effective measures to enable the provision of urgently needed basic services and humanitarian assistance to address the adverse conditions of life faced by Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Just 2 days later, while everyone was still grappling with the implications of this ruling, 9 major donor countries of UNRWA, the UN agency mandated to provide assistance and essential services to Palestinian refugees, announced the suspension of their funding to the organization. The countries include the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Switzerland, Finland, Australia, and Canada.
While there has been some confusion regarding the provisional measures, especially since the court did not order an immediate suspension of military operations by the Zionist regime in Gaza, the clearest measure by the court ensuring access to adequate humanitarian assistance has been rendered ineffective by the decision of these countries based on the claims that 12 out of the 13,000 UNRWA staff were involved in the October 7th attacks against the fabricated regime of Israel. While the world expected Western regimes to reconsider their carte blanche support for the Zionist regime after the ICJ ruling, it seems that they decided to take their stance against the Palestinian people under the risk of genocide to another level. This blatant decision, putting hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza at risk, is particularly shocking after the ICJ's order to ameliorate the humanitarian situation on the ground. UNRWA is the lifeline for Gaza, a tiny strip densely populated by refugees and other descendants. Out of the total population of 2.3 million, 1.7 million people are refugees or internally displaced. These people heavily depend on UNRWA assistance and services. Almost all people of Gaza are now at risk of famine and plague, as the food and healthcare system has been extensively destroyed by the Zionist regime. Moreover, at least 152 UNRWA personnel have been killed by the Zionist regime, not to mention those wounded. In December, in a letter to the President of the UN General Assembly, UNRWA's Commissioner General, Philippe Lazzarini, warned that the agency is on the edge of collapsing. He stated, "In my 35 years of work in complex emergencies, I would never have expected to write such a letter predicting the killing of my staff and the collapse of the mandates I am expected to fulfill." The 1948 Genocide Convention not only prohibits genocide, but also obligates all state parties to prevent genocide to their capacity. Francisca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, warned this weekend, the day after the ICJ concluded that Israel is plausibly committing genocide in Gaza, some states decided to defund UNRWA, collectively punishing millions of Palestinians at the most critical time and most likely violating their obligations under the Genocide Convention. Defunding the most crucial organization in the Gaza Strip, where the ICJ found a plausible risk of genocide not only through Israel's military operations but also due to the severe humanitarian situation it has created, only exacerbates the deterioration of living conditions of the Palestinian people. This, along with continuous support for the Zionist regime, including military assistance, potentially enables genocide in Gaza and does nothing to prevent it. On the other hand, these governments, the Western governments, must be reminded that the genocide as defined by the convention involves not only killing members of a particular group or causing them serious bodily or mental harm, but also deliberately inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction either in whole or in part. The Zionist regime's actions are likely already creating these destructive conditions. Knowingly attributing to the genocidal conditions in Gaza runs the risk of these states being complicit in genocide. These governments are now on the path to obtaining accomplice status. There is a plausible risk of genocide for 2 million people on one side, a fact established by the World Court vis-à-vis an alleged involvement of 12 out of 13,000 staff members in the October 7th events. Despite UNRWA taking immediate and serious measures to investigate these allegations, these Western regimes did not hesitate to put the lives of 2 million people at risk, while what needs to be done is precisely the opposite, to increase cooperation with UNRWA. Such actions may be subject to scrutiny before national and international tribunals in the days to come. The Chinese regime has persistently targeted UNRWA, asserting the unfounded allegation that the agency is the UN arm of the resistance movement Hamas. UNRWA is crucial not only for providing humanitarian assistance, but also for supporting the claims of Palestinian refugees to the right of return to their homeland, a right the fabricated regime of Israel has obstructed for decades. Since refugee status is passed through generations due to registration with UNRWA, the Zionist regime is never relieved of the burden of the refugee problem. These Western regimes are seemingly unaware of the fact that defunding UNRWA and letting it collapse ironically brings the Palestinian refugee problem closer to home. Article 1D of the Refugee Convention states, "This convention shall not apply to persons who are at present receiving from organs or agencies of the United Nations other than the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees Protection or Assistance. When such protection or assistance has ceased for any reason, without the position of such persons being definitively settled in accordance with the relevant resolutions adopted by the General Assembly of the United Nations, these persons shall, ipso facto, be entitled to the benefits of this convention." This article was specifically crafted for Palestinian refugees. If UNRWA becomes unable to fulfill its mandate, Palestinian refugees may automatically claim recognition of their refugee status in third states, including those defunding the agency. But apparently this would be applicable only if they survive the Zionist regime's war on Gaza. ICJ's provisional orders to prevent genocide in Gaza will only take effect when the letter and the spirit of the ruling are respected not only by the parties to the proceedings, but also by the larger international community. Forcing UNRWA to cease its operations at this crucial time serves no purpose but to contribute to the further devastation of the Palestinian people in this context. Western regimes must immediately cease their genocidal support to the fabricated regime of Israel.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Hours after targeting the American destroyer USS Gravely in the Red Sea, the spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Yahya Sariah, announced the successful targeting of the U.S. commercial ship Koi, which was heading to the occupied ports of Palestine with several naval missiles.
The naval forces of the Yemeni army carried out a military operation targeting an American commercial ship that was heading to the ports of occupied Palestine with several suitable naval missiles that directly hit it. This operation comes only hours after the naval forces of the Yemeni army targeted the American destroyer.